So last week, right after the election, I felt really run down and deeply fatigued. I'm imagining some others might have felt something similar, but I couldn't figure out what was going wrong with me. Everything ached and I was profoundly tired. And I had no temperature or any other symptoms of COVID. So after speaking to a doctor, we ruled that out. And then last Sunday, after a long day at work, I was overcome by an urge to dive into the ocean, thinking that somehow that might help me feel better. Now, I don't actually like the cold, and I've never been comfortable with ocean swimming, nor do I even own a wetsuit. And in the 20 years that I've lived in Southern California, I may have been in the ocean maybe 2 to 3 times max. So this was a really unusual urge for me to have in the middle of November. But the voice inside me kept saying, connect with the earth, get close to it, better yet, dive into the ocean. So I did. I put on my bathing suit and headed to the beach. It was a very low tide and there are many rocks along the shoreline in Santa Barbara. So I searched for an area with fewer rocks. I donned my 20-year-old swimsuit and resolutely walked into the water. It felt cold, but not unbearably so. According to my later research, the water temperature was probably around 58 degrees, so not freezing by any means, but I'd never swum in water that cold before. Determined, I just kept walking deeper and deeper into the water until I was in up to my neck. And it actually felt exhilarating and refreshing. My breathing deepened as I tried to breathe through the physical shock. And then I stayed in a few minutes and then came out. And though the wind was blowing and I was soaking wet, I actually didn't feel cold. Rather, I felt jubilant and peaceful, connected to the earth, to the ocean, and to the sand and the rocks and the elements. It really felt deeply cleansing. And you won't believe it, but when I woke up the next day, I really felt noticeably better. I had more energy and most of the fatigue had lifted. So then I decided to take a cold shower to reactivate that sense of shock on the body and the deep breathing that comes with it. And that helped energize me too. And then coincidentally, a day later, I happened to come across a podcast from Sounds True that interviewed a man by the name of Wim Hof. And Wim Hof is also known as the Iceman. Hof has something like 20 world records for climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in shorts, running a half marathon above the Arctic Circle barefoot, and standing in a container while covered with ice cubes for more than 112 minutes. He claims he cured himself from stress, depression and immune disorders through these encounters with the cold. In fact, Wim says that our modern day climatized lives in which we constantly adjust our surrounding temperatures to be comfortable have actually silenced an important survival mechanism in us. We're cut off from an instinctual part of ourselves that used to be activated to survive in the cold, which in turn can stimulate our immune system. And he claims that these extreme feats of being in freezing nature together with deep breathing have given him inner strength and connected him to a deep spirituality that he hadn't otherwise accessed. His methods have been the subject of hundreds of scientific studies, and they're finding that cold water exposure actually helps stave off dementia, and it helps people cure from depression and autoimmune disorders, from arthritis and other ailments, and it boosts people's immune systems. So I found it really interesting that my instinct told me to immerse myself in cold water and get close to the earth, as it seems to be exactly what I needed to cleanse and activate my own inner healing. But it also reminded me that we are intricately connected to the earth. We are a part of the earth. We're not separate from nature. In fact, we need the natural earth in our lives for our wholeness and well-being. And that was clearly what my body was craving, to feel one with our earth. We're not meant to dominate and control nature and remove ourselves from it. No, we're actually part of the earth. And the more we allow ourselves to be connected to it, to be in it, rather than observing it from a distance, the more we will learn the healing lessons of nature. An interview with the 86-year-old Jane Goodall, who lived for years in Africa among groups of chimpanzees, confirmed that. One of the most powerful lessons that she learned in life is that we're simply animals, mammals with a good brain, but we're part of the natural world. Our arrogant brains have led us to close ourselves off from nature and see it as separate and ourselves as superior. But Goodall remains convinced that after watching chimpanzees and other animals all her life, that only when head and heart work together, when we see ourselves as part of all living systems, can we truly achieve the greatness of mankind. Right now, she fears that we're destroying our only earth because our heads are so disconnected from our hearts. So the more we remove ourselves from the natural world and live and work in closed off, mechanized spaces with unnatural air and concrete all around, the more disconnected we become from nature and our whole selves. And that results in us being more stressed, sick, tired, and depressed. So Goodall urges us to open our hearts to animals and nature in order to feel our interconnectedness with all. Now, as you know, our seventh UU principle reminds us that we are part of the interconnected web of all existence. All existence. And the more we become conscious of that, the more we can live in harmony with nature and with one another. That every creature, every animal, every plant, every ecosystem is whole in itself, and here for its own reasons that contribute to the greater whole, the completeness of nature. As I walked through the woods surrounded by rather annoying flies that buzzed around my head, I remember that even flies are here to teach me to love and embrace what is, and that they probably have some other really good reasons that the scientists among you know for existing too. Now, Joanna Macy and Molly Brown talk about living systems theory in their book, Coming Back to Life. And living systems theory explains that nature is self-organizing and that it adheres to coherent and consistent principles. In fact, each system, from one as tiny as an atom to as vast as a galaxy, is whole in itself, or a holon. And each system is not reducible simply to its parts. It is both whole in its own right, as you'll see in this diagram, comprised of subsystems, as well as being part of a larger whole or system. And each holon is necessary in relationship to the larger system that it's a part of. And that's how our whole universe is organized. These living systems are able to self-regulate and maintain their balance amidst changing conditions. And Grant, you can take the slide down now. Thank you. In other words, nature knows how to heal itself and find equilibrium if we let it. So if we stopped pumping greenhouse gases into the world, nature would organically find a way to heal itself and come back into balance. In fact, they explain that open systems like nature not only maintain their balance, but continue to evolve in complexity. If disturbed, these systems can either fall apart or adapt, but they will always amplify their feedback to get our attention. For example, we see the feedback that nature is giving us now as a result of human-induced climate change through massive storms and wildfires. Or we get feedback from our bodies when they're injured, or through pain or raised temperatures or fatigue. So Macy warns that if we ignore this feedback, it is at our peril because it leads to unraveling. We must heed the feedback that our interdependent system offers us if our planet and we are to heal. So in a nutshell, this theory reminds us that we're all interconnected and that what happens in one part of the system impacts another. We are like cells in the body of the earth. Though we appear to be separate entities, we're actually completely interdependent and interwoven with one another and the earth. Now, ecotherapy is a new branch of psychotherapy that some of you may be familiar with that takes people out into nature to help them heal. When we get in tune with nature, it has the profound capacity to remind us of who we truly are, to strip our existence back to our primal animal nature, to inspire us and connect us to elements much greater than ourselves, to bring us to a place of awe and wonder. Even during this difficult, restricted time of COVID, we can all get out into nature and feel its healing lessons. Indeed, we're so blessed to live in a part of the world where nature is readily accessible to us. The German poet Rainer Maria Rilke says, "If we could surrender to Earth's intelligence, we would rise up rooted like trees." So I invite us to do that. In fact, nature continually teaches us extraordinary lessons about renewal and integration and regeneration. When I walked in the ancient Ho rainforest up in Washington State, I was so moved by the giant 1,000-year-old trees towering around us. And some had fallen over time and were slowly decaying and feeding the soil with their minerals and bark. And almost by magic, the fallen tree trunks were acting as a new foundation for the trees to grow from, new trees. It was extraordinary to see these ancient falling giants serve as the foundation for new life. And we see that throughout nature, don't we? Dying plants and animals decompose and return to the earth to feed it with nutrients that allow a miraculous life cycle to continue. Nothing is wasted. We humans have big lessons to learn from these organic cycles of birth and death in which everything nourishes everything else. It reminds me of an amazing story I heard in a Netflix program called Connected. And if you haven't checked it out, I highly recommend it. The show's host visits a remote part of the Sahara Desert in Chad, Africa, and finds 1,000-year-old decomposed fish skeletons and other skeletons from when the desert was a lake. While he collects the skeletons, a strong windstorm kicks up, which carries that Saharan dust not only into his eyes, but all across the world. The dust storms can be as large as the continental United States and carry as much as 50 million elephants worth of dust a year. It's hard to even imagine. Although the dust storms are very disturbing out in the Sahara, he learns that the dust ends up in the Atlantic Ocean and that the minerals from the dust feed the phytoplankton underwater. And this allows the plankton to photosynthesize and produce oxygen and create more food for the ocean creatures. Apparently, half of the oxygen that we humans breathe comes from the ocean phytoplankton, and the dust feeds it for it to be able to create that. Plus, the dust also drags with it CO2 down to the ocean floor, helping curb climate change. Quite an extraordinary way for the Earth to renew itself, isn't it? And then we learn how the dust clouds land on developing hurricanes and literally smother them, helping reduce their severity. Without the dust storms, we would be getting more severe hurricanes every year, if you can imagine. But the Saharan dusty journey doesn't stop there. It continues across the Atlantic to the Amazon rainforest, where it lands like a gentle dusting on the tree canopies and feeds the rainforest soil with necessary minerals for it to continue to thrive. The constant rain and flooding in that part of the world actually wash away many of the rainforest nutrients. So thankfully, the mineral-laden dust from the Sahara replenishes the soil in the rainforest so that the Earth's lungs, the incredible canopy of oxygen-producing trees, are both fed and nourished. So one of the Earth's most desolate places ends up feeding one of the world's most vital places. That which is seemingly dead helps create abundant life somewhere else. It's such an amazing example of how something we humans might label an annoying dust storm or useless turns out to be vital for other parts of this beautiful planet to thrive. Nature is exquisitely perfect in its symbiotic, intelligent existence, isn't it? But sadly, too often, we humans think of it as nothing but a resource that is there to serve us. And in our arrogance, our entitlement, we dominate it, we compromise it, we mine it and destroy and remove it. We harm its natural capacity to self-regulate, to heal and to flourish. So my friends, what if instead we looked at nature as our great teacher, our ally, our relative, our sister, our mother, our father? What if we looked at every tree, every plant, every animal, every rock, every body of water, each mountain or desert, and I have them all here on my stole. What if we looked at them all as a precious gift, part of an extraordinary design? And we are part of that extraordinary design, not separate from it. We are meant to flow with it, interact with it, be in it, be a part of it, dance with it, live in it, rather than dominate and harm it. So as we approach this Thanksgiving, I want to acknowledge the wisdom teachings that Native American traditions have offered about our Earth for millennia. This year marks the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims landing at Plymouth, which many will no doubt be celebrating this Thanksgiving. However, as Unitarian Universalists, I would like to invite us to give thanks to the Mashpee Wampanoag Nation of the Northeast and the Indigenous peoples of this continent who have lived here for tens of thousands of years and been stewards of this beautiful land. They did so by being attuned to the cycles of nature, working with nature and honoring their connection to nature. And these wisdom keepers of our nation have treated our Earth as a living entity that deserves respect, worship, and care. So, my beloveds, I invite you this Thanksgiving to give thanks for our abundant Earth. Give thanks for how she nourishes us, sustains us, teaches us, holds us, and partners with us. If you're living alone, don't forget that nature is here as your friend and ally. And if you're feeling lonely, go outside and connect with the earth. Be in nature, go to the ocean or hiking in the mountains or sit in a park or some outside space. Look at the flowers, the butterflies, those lizards and birds. Maybe even sit on the ground and feel your connection to the earth. Watch and listen to birdsong. Feel the soil between your fingers. Feel the solidity of ancient rocks around you. Feel the fresh air gently blowing on your face and take in the smells of the sage and brush that surround you. You may notice then that you are part of it. And not alone, after all. We are one with nature. We are nature. And when we begin to see it as part of who we are, we may feel that strong call to protect and love our planet even more and work for its sustainability. So today, to celebrate and give thanks for these gifts of nature, we will partake in our traditional Thanksgiving ritual. As the earth gives to us, we will give back to those in need. And as we give to others, we also receive gifts of love and abundance in return. Now, normally we would share these gifts of our earth's bounty with you here in our sanctuary, and I miss looking out and seeing your beautiful faces here. But today we invite you instead to drive by Chalice after worship safely, socially distanced in your cars with a mask on. And we invite you to please bring non-perishable food to share with farm workers and others in need through Adelante Comunidad. And while you're here, you in turn will receive some homemade bread, a symbol of our earth's abundance made lovingly and safely by bakers in our own congregation. My friends, this Thanksgiving, may we truly give thanks for the abundant riches of our earth. May we recommit to remembering our interconnectedness with nature and do all that we can to protect and care for our precious planet. And may we honor those among us who know how to be stewards and partners with our earth. May it be so. Blessed be.